Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Man, there's a lot to unpack on a Monday. I almost called you and like, hey, we got to start the show at 8.
Yeah, it was a busy,
a lot to do.
Busy weekend.
Yeah, we got a lot to do. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's with us. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we've got a ton to unpack from the NBA Finals, Game 7 last night. The Oklahoma City Thunder, of course, if you're listening to this program, I'm sure you know that the Oklahoma City Thunder won the NBA Finals. Their first NBA championship since moving to Oklahoma City in 2008. Congratulations to them. Man, there's so many layers to this because I want to, the Tyrese Haliburton injury obviously kind of casts a pall over the entire game when he went down 7 minutes in, but we have to separate that because I think the bottom line to all of this is I think we were robbed of a really, really incredible game. We still got a pretty good game seven, but a really, I think, knockdown, drag out, down to the final seconds type of game seven. But I still feel like the right team won.
I agree.
Oklahoma City was the best team in the league all year. So while we were, I think the Pacers did not get to give their best shot at it without Tyrese Haliburton. And while I think we got a worse game because of it, I don't walk away feeling like, oh, the wrong team is hoisting the trophy this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think when we look at the road and home splits in this series, there were certain players that just could not function on the road.
That's it.
And they were really, really good at home, but some players, you know, again, like Chet Holmgren really struggled on the road. Mm-hmm. At home, he was a monster. And if you had all three of your big guys going, there was no way that that team was going to lose. At least I didn't think that they were going to lose. And to be honest with you, like, look, they proved that they were the best team in the league. They won 18 more regular season games than the Indiana Pacers. And
that's crazy.
The Pacers put up a fight, and it was a valiant fight, but when that injury hit, it just shook the entire game.
Yep.
Right? And it wasn't just that, you know, you lost your best player, your playmaker. He was also firing away. You lost your, like, we all talk about this skill that Tyrese Haliburton has to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his ability to walk in front of the media and just be honest and forthright and intelligent and articulate.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same behind the scenes. When you see that guy, the guy that you count on for so many things, not just to be, you know, the head of the snake on the court, but to be one of your leaders and really the vocal leader of a team, a guy who mm-hmm. goes out and represents you in every single situation. When you see him go down like that, and everybody in the building knows what happened. It was just so devastating, man. So devastating.
As soon as the way that went down, and I want to make sure we do talk about Oklahoma City because they were unbelievable this year.
Yeah,
they because they're going to be shell shocked too. Like there's something, and they were pointing this out on the broadcast. There's something that they have to overcome mentally too of not going, oh, Haliburton's out, we're going to win.
Yeah.
And not just kicking their feet up and getting punched in the mouth and all of a sudden they're down 10, right? But you knew it was bad. So Tyrese Haliburton falls down while making and turns it over. And in the middle of calling the break, because the camera, obviously Halliburton's on the other side of the court, the camera's not on him. And in the middle of his call, Mike Breen said, and Halliburton's hurt.
Mm.
And when he that is, you know, like Mike Breen's one of the best play-by-play guys to ever do it.
Yeah.
He recognized what was happening and knew the fact that he knew to let us know that Halliburton, in mid-play, that Halliburton is hurt on that play.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have done that if he was just kind of still laying on the ground. He was doing that because he saw the reaction from Tyrese Halliburton. And, I mean, it's just devastating. It hit this weird emotional note for me where you see this guy who is in a game seven who said, if I can walk, I want to play.
Yeah.
And he goes down and didn't just go down. And you see sometimes a guy gets hurt and he turns over and they'll just point and they'll be like, all right. But like the release of emotion from him. And like you said, that's him. He's going to get out. He's going to put it all out there for everybody. And the fact that it was really, really hard to not feel that emotion coming out of the TV screen when you saw him on the ground recognizing that his season is over, his team season is over, his next season might be over. He's not going to get a chance to contribute for the final 41 minutes of this game.
Yeah.
Just a brutal, brutal situation, man.
Well, that and, you know, being in the building when a couple of these have happened, these right. Achilles tears, his reaction was absolutely identical to Rudy Gay's.
Yeah.
Like I was up on the NBC booth. It's where I mm-hmm. used to sit and watch the game. And Rudy Gay came down, went to take a step, and collapses in the middle of the floor and is mm-hmm. right below me. And he's looking up towards me and he's just hitting the floor with his fist. It was so reminiscent.
Mm-hmm.
And the play just keeps going. And somebody's career is like in the balance. Yeah. And it's such a horrible thing to see happen. And like everyone knew. It's not like there was a question.
Oh.
It's not like, oh, he might have like hurt his calf a little worse. Nope, we all knew right away. And then
immediately.
And then ESPN made sure that we knew.
Jesus.
Like that was like I don't even understand what was happening with their production crew. We did not need to see Tyrese Halliburton's Achilles rupture on camera at least 45 times.
It was excessive.
Yeah.
Like, you show it once, and you go, oh, man, okay. Like, yeah, we got it.
Yeah.
We saw it. And I understand they're trying to make sure that, you know, not everybody's locked in for the first 7 minutes. There might be mm-hmm. people who show up in the middle of the second quarter or in the second half, whatever it is. And they've got to, you know, update people. Here's what happened to Tyrese Halliburton. But you don't have to show it. You don't have to show it every single time in super slow motion. And then we're going to get the zoom in on his crying face while he pounds a foot. No, we understand.
Yeah.
You can just let us know Tyrese Halliburton is out officially with a lower leg injury. And his dad told Lisa Salters it's an Achilles. We got it.
Yeah, we got it.
The slow motion replay was I don't understand. This is separate from the game, obviously, but they won't show a nasty knee injury or a nasty ankle injury. They won't show. I don't need to see an Achilles snap over and 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 over again, especially in the middle of an awesome basketball game.
Yeah, man, there was a point where there was someone shooting free throws, and they just ran the clip.
Yep.
Right in the middle and then they cut it short. We're like, what exactly are you doing?
It was frustrating. Like they lost their ever-loving minds.
Yeah.
And while we're here, while we're doing the ESPN thing, I cannot believe this is not a Kyle Madsen original thought that ESPN's NBA coverage is sorely lacking. That they went to halftime. First of all, Stephen A. Smith got cut off by commercials in the middle of a rant, so they go to commercial after the half ends, they come back, and Stephen A. Smith starts screaming about how, and I like Stephen A. Smith, by the way, typically, I'm sick of him, starts screaming about how someone needs to step up. That's not analysis. That's first take. Jalen Williams needs to step up in this game right now, or he's not Scottie Pippen. Like, okay, man, whatever. You had Bob Myers on your panel, okay?
Yep.
Look, I don't think Bob Myers is great on TV, but Bob Myers was the general manager of the Golden State Warriors, or president of basketball operations for the Golden State Warriors, when Kevin Durant had a calf strain, tried to come back during the finals, and blew his Achilles a few minutes into the game.
Yep.
Bob Myers got on television in front of the nation and cried about this. He cried real tears in a press conference about Kevin Durant doing the exact same thing that Tyrese Halliburton did. Don't you think it'd be really valuable to go, hey, Bob, you're on this panel. What do you do here? If you're the Pacers, what are the emotions in the locker room? What are the emotions for the players? What are you doing with Tyrese Halliburton? There are so many things you can find out from Bob Myers, who has firsthand experience with this. And instead, we've got Stephen A. Smith literally reading the box score and then saying that the players who don't have big numbers in the box score need to have bigger numbers in the box score.
Hmm.
Like, thanks. Glad we got this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just horrible.
It
was brutal.
I don't understand why that's part of the NBA coverage for the finals. Why do we need someone yelling? They're yelling over the top of each other the entire break. It is so nerve-wracking, and you're just sitting there like this stress level, the tension that's coming through your TV. You're just like, what in the world are we doing here? Like, this is not, it's not entertaining at all. And it's just bad. It's just bad television.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like really, really difficult. The entirety of it, like whether it was like clip after clip after clip of Ty on the ground, or it was like going in and talking to some guys that just really have no respect for each other,
mm-hmm.
and are just like trying to show up the other people on the panel and like no way to control what's happening. Like, I really, really hope there's changes. And I think it's a good thing that the TNT crew is going to be, you know, doing ESPN games, right? That's who's going to be
some of them.
The like out front and center. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to me, because for what we saw yesterday was just like completely unacceptable. And I didn't even have the sound on. Like, we weren't even listening with the sound on. We were at a sports bar watching the game and just like very, very upset with everything that was happening. But then we went home, watched halftime. It's like, oh my gosh, just
it's like a
turn
separate,
it off.
It's like a separate thing from the game. You're taking away from the game at that point.
Oh, fully taken away.
The Pacers had a lead at halftime after Tyrese Halliburton got hurt. A minor miracle, right? And Shams Charania has confirmed it's a torn Achilles for Tyrese Halliburton, just kind of confirming what we already knew. So that's now official.
Yeah, it's official.
So it's taking away from the game, and that's the problem for me. The fact that the Pacers rallied the way they did after Tyrese Halliburton went down and didn't even do the thing where they went down like 10 because they were just so shell-shocked.
Mm-hmm.
They got right back in. They took a lead into halftime. The story there, to me, is, holy crap, how did the Pacers do that? Not, somebody from Oklahoma City has to step up!
Yeah.
Like, all right. It just doesn't. It doesn't do it for me, man. And then they cut off Stephen A. Smith to go to more commercials. I think that had to be an accident. And then they still found a way to get him his rant in that he had queued up about players stepping up. I don't know, man. The point in the game where it couldn't quite feel over because it's still the Pacers,
mm-hmm.
and they've just defied odds all season, but where the game really flipped was Miles Turner, with 8.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, hits a three. It ties the game at 56. And Miles Turner had not hit the broadside of a barn all playoffs.
He was not
or
good.
All series.
Yeah.
So he cashes this three finally, ties the game. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander comes back down, answers with a three. TJ McConnell turnover, Chet Holmgren three. TJ McConnell turnover, Jalen Williams three. All of a sudden it goes from tie game to 9-point game in 1:07.
Yeah, that moment there where McConnell just ran himself into trouble.
Yep.
Like multiple times. It was like, oh man, composure, dude.
Yep.
He just lost his composure and it was boom, boom, boom. And that is the true gift of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's it.
They have a way of hitting you so hard so quickly. And just like lights out, like they can knock anybody out like that quick. And watching them like find their footing in a really tense moment, right? You're mm-hmm. still, everyone is trying to recover from the Halliburton injury, but to sit there and like just hit a team and then put them away, that is what we saw all season long from that team. They had their home crowd behind them. I think if it was in Indiana, it probably would have been a little different because sure. that's what we saw throughout this series, that the home team really had an advantage. Mm-hmm. But it was tough to watch. But that, again, that is why the Thunder are the best team in basketball. That yep. they are the best team in basketball. There's no question about it. I hate that their championship, their game seven is taken away by such a bad injury. Mm-hmm. It's sort of what happens in these situations. But my goodness, like what an incredible team, what an incredible franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're building something. This is going to be a team that we're going to see again and again and again over the next 5 to 7 years.
Yep, it sure feels that way. So we've got to talk about the Tyrese Halliburton injury in the context of the other two Achilles tears in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
And whether the NBA is going to finally take their schedule as a player safety issue. We'll dive into that. Kevin Durant got traded yesterday. FYI, in case the NBA needed more news, the draft is on Wednesday, by the way. So Kevin Durant got traded. We'll talk about that and what it means for the Kings, what it means for Houston. You talk about Oklahoma City being dominant. Is Houston now on that level? We'll talk about the Kings' place in the NBA hierarchy. And, of course, the NBA draft is Wednesday. ESPN dropped a new mock draft. And at least Joe and I don't know where you land, James, are obsessed with the guy that they have going to the Kings. We'll talk about that as well. All that coming up in the next couple hours. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's behind the glass. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
He's James, I'm Kyle. Joe's over there. Nice series win for the Giants this weekend, Joe. Rafael Devers got his first home run.
Now we're talking.
Love to see it. Love yeah, to see it for your guys.
I don't think he's going to have too much trouble out there. I like the way he can hit to any part of the field, and
a lefty going out Oppo Taco at Oracle Park is crazy.
You never see it.
That's banana. You never see it, bro. That's just ridiculous.
But I think we're going to start seeing a little more.
Yeah, I think so too. Just ridiculous power from Rafi Devers. All right, let's talk about this Tyrese Halliburton injury stuff because he joined Damian Lillard and Jason Tatum as players with Achilles tears this postseason, and we're reaching a point, and I think that there's more to this discussion than, well, back in the 70s and 80s, they played all the games, because it's a larger discussion than 82 games now versus 82 games then. And players are soft now and they didn't used to be. What we run into now is players are coming into the leagues. ESPN did a whole thing about this. I think it was 2017. About how players are coming into the league now because of the AAU circuit and because of all the basketball that kids are playing growing up now to stay in recruiting circles and to play basketball, to advance their careers.
Yep.
Guys are entering the league now at 18, 19, 20 years old with the tendons and ligaments of 30, 31, 32-year-olds. It's a scientific thing.
Yeah.
And a scientific thing I am not qualified to or am going to explain. You can find this article. It's on ESPN.
Yeah.
It's not currently on ESPN. I forget. Russell Baxter, I believe, wrote it. So on top of all that, you're getting this 82-game schedule, and then you're getting a 4-7-game playoff rounds where the games very quickly start going every other day. On top of a style of play that is faster, more spread out, more up and down. Lately, it's been very physical to boot. It is not tenable, I don't think. Like, what the NBA is looking at is a player safety problem right now. You have 8 Achilles tears this year around the NBA.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's too many. And now you have stars. You have Jason Tatum, one of the faces of your league, ideally over the next 5 or 6 years. Had his career altered by this. Tyrese Halliburton, same deal. You got robbed of an awesome game 7 because he still got a pretty good game. You got robbed of an awesome game 7 because of this injury to Tyrese Halliburton. Damian Lillard isn't going to get to ride off into the sunset because, hey, you know what? His career might just kind of be over now.
Yeah. And a team owes him $55 million in each of the, and then I think 60 next year.
Man.
55 next year, 60, 59 the year after that.
So I think at some point people always go, well, the NBA is not going to cut their season short. Are players going to take less money? Like, man, they might.
Okay,
they might if it means not tearing their Achilles.
There's a couple of problems that I think that need to be worked out. Number one, having kids play one sport is not the right way to do things.
That's correct.
Right? So that's number one. Like when I was a kid, I played baseball, I played football, I played basketball, I played volleyball. Like you play all kinds of sports all the time. That is not at all what happens now.
Nope.
Like my oldest played so much soccer, competitive soccer, that he overdeveloped his quads so bad that we thought he pulled a groin, but it wasn't that. It said his quads were so overdeveloped that it grabbed the top of his hip muscle and pulled it into the hip socket.
Gross.
So we had to go do PT and figure out a way to get his glutes to fire and his hamstrings to engage. And these are the things that happen. Like, you go out to, again, because I help.
With sports specialization, you mean?
Yeah, with sports specialization. So I go out and I try to work with the kids on the soccer team. You go, okay, who wants to be the goalkeeper? And everyone just kind of looks around like, I don't want to be the goalkeeper. And you get one kid to raise your hands like, okay, what other sports do you play? Well, I don't really play any other sports. Like, what do you mean? They don't know how to field a ground ball like a shortstop. They don't know how to go up high for a
rebound.
For a rebound, or like a football player knows how to go over the middle and reach up and catch a ball above his head. Don't know how to do it. They don't know how to make a triangle with their hands. You're sitting here like, what in the world is happening? But with the basketball kids, they are playing nonstop. And it's only it's the same repetitive motion again and again and again. So they're putting all this strain on very specific body parts that are going to be the body parts that break down when they're in their 20s and 30s. And that's part of the problem. The other problem I'm going to point out is that NBA teams do not share information with each other about injury risk and about injury maintenance. They don't. It's proprietary technology. So when I tell you guys about how the players come in, before they go out on the court, they jump on these metal plates, right? They're these big, like, rubber, like, mats with with these metal plates that are inserted that, like, count deceleration, acceleration, like, force, all that stuff. And the teams are, like, monitoring. They go out, they warm up, they come back, they do it one more time before they go into the locker room and get ready for the game. It's a team's way of just monitoring a player's, like, physical, like, readiness, right? So if you're wearing, like a Aura ring, an Aura ring tells you what your readiness score is. And if you're like, oh, man, my readiness score says I'm, like, a 65, and you go out and you walk and you're like, I literally feel like a 65 today. That's not good. And then other days you're like, oh, my readiness says I'm like a 92. You get out there, you're like, holy cow, I'm like springing. Like there is technology that's out there that does help with these things, but the teams aren't sharing it with each other. And so there isn't some massive database that's telling everybody, hey, this is what our predictions are for this type of injury. You can see a player start to his performance start to lag, and you say, okay, we need to cut back on practice time, or we need to cut to shave some minutes off in a game, or maybe he needs to take two games off, right? And you see if their body recovers. Those are things that are happening behind the scenes. But when you get to game seven, when you get to even a game six in the NBA finals, like, all bets are off. Half of these players are out there with injuries that shouldn't be playing. But that's the game. And so I don't blame Ty. I don't blame the medical. I don't blame it. Bad things happen. He took a risk. The team took a risk. They knew the risk 100%. He knew the risk. And he said, okay, I'm going to put my career on the line and go out there and try and win game seven.
Yeah, man. Like, that, the need for everything to become a take is just, like, it's not anyone's fault.
Yeah.
Like, if this was November, Tyrese Haliburton would not have been playing. Facts. The minute he strained his calf, he would have been out 2-3 weeks, however long necessary. Remember, Trey Lyles, before the 23-24 season, dealt with the calf injury and was out like weeks.
Well, same thing this season. He sat for a huge stretch of time
this
season.
Was that this year?
No, it was both.
Oh, okay.
He right coming into last season, he strained his calf, and they sat him for like first 4 weeks of the season.
It was a long time.
And then this season again, he had a moment where he had a calf strain.
Yeah.
Again, like, it's, you can predict, like, the calf is like the easiest one of all of them.
Yeah.
It's the easiest one to predict a catastrophic injury.
Yep.
And that's why I said it last week. Like, you could easily, like, watch him go out there and everything's fine and then it's not and it's over.
That's literally what happened. Game six, like, oh, okay, yeah, not 100%, but looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Cooking in game one, in game seven yesterday, and then one step, didn't even, like, not just, just a step forward to go to dribble and just.
And I did not want to be right at all.
No.
At all. But, like, this is the sport.
Well, it's the risk that's inherent here. It's why this wasn't a, oh man, he's got a shoulder issue that might affect his bicep.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't, no, everybody knows, hey, the risk with a calf, the reason this is such a monumental deal on should he play, should he not, it's not, man, he's going to play on a sprained ankle and he might turn that ankle again.
Yeah.
It's, hey, he's going to play on this calf and he might pop his Achilles.
It's just like, and if he has a partially torn ACL, bad idea.
Right.
Bad idea. Like,
but if he had that and was able to walk, he was going to play. Like, that's the thing, is nobody lied to Tyrese Haliburton here.
Nope.
Tyrese Haliburton was not forced to play. He said, this is game seven. I've waited my whole life for this. I'm 48 minutes away from an NBA championship. I can walk. Mm-hmm. I can conceive. I can go out there and I can give effort. I'm going to play. And the worst possible outcome happened. It's awful. But I bet if Tyrese Haliburton was sitting here right now, we say, hey, do you regret it? He would say no.
Yeah.
He would tell you no. Do you know what he would regret? If he, I imagine, I know this is how I would feel. Again, I don't want to prescribe my feelings to Tyrese Haliburton, but if this is me, I would regret not playing. I'd regret if I went, hey, you know what? Now I got this calf. I might hurt my Achilles. You guys get it. I'm going to sit on the bench. I'll cheer you on. Go get him, guys, in game seven of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And then you lose and you're like, hey, man, I could have probably helped.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a horrible, awful, the most unfortunate outcome that nobody wanted.
Yep.
But I don't, I saw the immediate reaction yesterday was, fire the Pacers medical staff. Like, they didn't tell him, they weren't lying to him. They knew. Everybody knew the risk here.
Yep.
It's not, Tyrese Haliburton's an idiot. No, man. Tyrese Haliburton's a damn competitor. That's why you play this game, is to play for an NBA championship. One game away from an NBA championship. All those AAU games you played, all the college games, all the early mornings, all the practices, fruits for that moment. And the worst outcome came. And that sucks.
Yeah. I'd even, Secure in a Bagley in the chat says, I do think this is the last calf strain that players will try to play with.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. The same situation happens next year. There's a very good chance a player does the exact same thing.
Do you know why we know this? Because it happened to Kevin Durant 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And Tyrese Halliburton said, I don't care. So,
you know why we also know this? Because there are football players who go out there with 10 concussions and still play. They still play.
A level of competitive psychopathness. Now, if this is game one of the first round and he's dealing with a calf strain, maybe they handle it differently. But you're 48 minutes away from the final, from hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy.
Yeah.
I don't blame anyone in this situation. Like, it's just a brutal, awful thing that happened.
Bad things happen.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, I do wonder, our guy Dr. Nirav Pandya, friend of the program, who is the professor of UCSF Orthopedic Surgery and the director of sports medicine at Benioff Children's Hospital, said this yesterday. Soft tissue injuries defined these NBA playoffs, which I kind of agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Three Achilles tears in the playoffs is not normal. Warriors losing due to Curry's Curry due to a hamstring, and Denver being impacted by Aaron Gordon's hamstring as well. The NBA has to look at making some changes. So somebody said, "What changes would you make?" And he said, "Space out the games in the regular season and/or decrease the number of regular season games. No back-to-backs, and increasing the duration of time between playoff games." None of that seems. I'm sure there's a technical business thing that matters here that I'm just not, that I'm missing. And I will put my hand up and understand that. If you're the NBA, why are you not like, yeah, you know what? Good idea. We're not going to limit the number of games, because I genuinely don't think there's anything that could happen that the league would cut the number of games from their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But why not just say, okay, hey, we're going to space these games out. We're going to super limit back-to-back. Every team has two back-to-backs a year, whatever it is. And we're going to take this thing into mid-July. What's stopping them from doing that?
It's a great question, because I got to be honest, over the last couple of years, they're shortening the days in the season. And they're doing things like adding the in-season tournament in. Just that adds more stress. They elongated the NBA All-Star Weekend. It's no longer NBA All-Star Weekend. It's a week.
Right.
But they also shortened when the date of the season starts. So it used to be like 5 days earlier we'd start. We used to start training camp the last week of September.
Mm-hmm.
Now training camp starts the first week of October. Mm-hmm. And so they took away another week at the beginning of the season. And so they keep compressing the schedule. They eliminated 4 games in 5 nights, but they didn't eliminate 5 games in 7 nights.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play 2, have a day off, play 1, have a day off, play 2 again, and then you can have a day off, play another 2, and you can perpetually be stuck in 5 games in 7 nights.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. Then there's the air travel. And I know they're staying in 5-star hotels and they're
Sure.
But that doesn't matter. You're still, your body clock is all messed up. Mm-hmm. Everything is all messed up.
And I get the travel thing. That's great for, the Kings have to fly to Boston, and they're going to stay in Boston. They're going to play against New York, and they're going to play against the Nets. They're going to fly. Okay. Like, that's fine. But when it doesn't matter what type of travel you're taking, when you're going to Texas and then Oklahoma City and then Minnesota, and then you got a game down in Atlanta, and then on the way back, you got to stop in Utah. Like, there's no amount of travel that makes that okay.
Nope.
No type of travel that makes that normal. So, yeah, man, I'm sure they're trying to, by shortening everything, they're trying to, like, create urgency, right? We're not going to limit the number of games, because that's the thing the NFL has, right? There's 17 games. It's just every game matters so much. And so it's like the NBA is trying to manufacture this by taking the 82-game season, just kind of truncating it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just gonna shorten it just a little bit. And it doesn't, all it does is put additional strain on their players.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that you're seeing these wear and tear injuries on players. You know, with older players, Dame, who's played so many freaking games, so many minutes, like, it sucks, but it feels like, man, it's a little bit preventable. Steph Curry hurting his hamstring. Hey, you know what? 37-year-old had a grade one hamstring injury. All right, you know, stuff happens. But when you've got three guys, three separate dudes with Achilles tears, three stars,
yeah,
to boot, and I don't say that because stars matter more, but if you're the league, that puts your red flags up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, like 2 years ago, the Kings won 46 games, right?
Uh-huh.
But from on March 20th, they started a road trip, Raptors, Wizards, Magic. So they fly to the East Coast. And that's not even
Toronto, D.C., Orlando.
Yeah, that's not even like... So then they come home and they play five games.
Okay.
And then they go back on the road for Knicks, Boston, Nets, Thunder. So between March 20th and April 9th, they had seven games on the road, two trips to the East Coast. And then in the middle of that, they had six games at home. In like a 19-day stretch, you had 13 games. And of those 13 games, two sets of them are on the East Coast. And you know what happened? Malik Monk got hurt and Kevin Huerter got hurt and the Kings didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That's like these schedule anomalies, that can't happen anymore. Late in the season, mm-hmm. you're making a team fly to the East Coast twice. It just doesn't make any sense, man. No. So they've got to rework some of that stuff and just be more conscious mm-hmm. of what's happening. Yeah. But, you know, maybe this forces a hand. Like you just lost a lot of money. Some great players just got hurt.
There is so much more to this than injuries happen.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that bothers me so much. And I would love to see the NBA take this seriously as a player safety problem. Will they? TBD.
Yeah.
But if this postseason and the fact that injuries kind of defined the entire thing, I don't know whatever will do it. We'll keep talking about what went on yesterday, not only in the NBA Finals, but the Kevin Durant trade.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the West? What does it mean for the Kings? We'll talk about that next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's with us. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I'm Kyle, he's James, Joe's over there. Jiffy Lube, omnipresent. Real quick, before we get to the Kevin Durant trade, I do want to talk about one more thing from the game last night.
No.
Because this has been such a Halliburton injury-focused conversation. What Oklahoma City's defense did yesterday, and you alluded to this earlier, 17 assists and 23 turnovers for Indiana, including 8 assists to 13 turnovers in the second half.
Yeah.
And that run we talked about earlier where Miles Turner hit the three to tie to 56, but then Shea three, steal, Chet three, steal, Jalen Williams three to go up nine. It was like from that point forward, it was like watching a pass rush in a 10-point game with 3 minutes left where they don't have to worry about the run. They don't have to worry about, you know, reading what the offensive line is doing. Like, no, it's meet at the quarterback.
Yep.
That's when you pin their ears back, and that's when you start seeing a quarterback go down 2-3 plays in a row because defense doesn't have to worry about anything other than just getting to the quarterback. That's what that felt like after that run, that little 9-0 spurt. It just, from that point on, it was like OKC's defense was...
Well, they're one of the great defensive teams that we've seen in the last, like, 25 years.
Yes.
They just are. Yep. And they have waves of players to send at you. And not all of them are great offensive players, but I think we saw this balance the whole time between the great offense and the great defense.
Yep.
And then when you lose the great orchestrator of the great offensive team, mm-hmm. it really did sort of take the wind out of their sails. And you look, though, Benedict Mathurin was incredible.
was like, awesome.
Yeah, had just an incredible impact on the game.
24-13, I think.
But then other guys faded. Like Neesmith was totally ineffective. Mm-hmm. You know, Miles Turner, totally ineffective.
Obi Toppin.
Yeah, Obi Toppin just completely no-showed in the...
Obi Toppin was not a bad man yesterday.
No, he was not a bad man yesterday.
Yeah, it just... and that's where the loss of Tyrese Haliburton matters, because he's one of those guys that just makes the players around him better. Mm-hmm. And when it's, hey, Obi, just kind of go drift from the wing to the corner based on where this defender goes, and then catch and shoot when the ball comes to you, is way different than... Hey, Obi, you're gonna have to handle a little bit above the wing. Can you create your own shot? No. Okay, get it over to Neesmith, and now you're gonna kind of drift over there. Okay, hey, can you shoot it? It's a little contested. Very, very different sport.
Yeah, yeah. And like, shout out to Mark Daigneault. His team was so locked in.
They dialed.
Like, absolutely. I think both teams were. I just think, you know, the like losing your best player is rough, but I thought both teams were just so dialed in. And the defensive effort, the first, second, third effort by good. OKC on the defensive end was just wild.
Yeah, Chet, for as not effective as he was in Game 6, was outstanding. I think he had 5 blocks.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, ridiculous. It's the home and road.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at his home and road splits during the playoffs. You can see a total line in the sand of where he's a great player and where he's just like an average player.
Still growing as a player.
Yeah, yeah. Still trying to figure it out. And that's what the scary thing is about the Thunder. They're just figuring it out. Jalen Williams became a star in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He coming into those playoffs, I think everybody in the league is like, why is he all NBA? And why is he all NBA first team defensive? He's a good player, but why are we jumping steps? And then he showed you why in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay.
Yep.
That's like, who you are now. We're good.
It is. Yeah, we got it. All right, speaking of home and road splits, there's a new NBA star who has a new home. Kevin Durant got traded to the Houston Rockets yesterday, a few hours before the game. Houston gets Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix gets Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick, and 5 second-round picks. I need to know real quick, before we dive into this, we'll talk about, is Phoenix better, is Houston better? Is there a way the Kings can kind of draft off of this? Anyways, how do they land on 5 second-round picks? Do they go, all right, does Phoenix go, we want Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick, or Houston says, we'll give you this, and Phoenix goes, no, we need more. And does Houston start going, a second, like more, 2 seconds? No, it's not gonna. 4 seconds? Not really comfortable with that deal just yet. How about 5 second ref? All right, fine. You got us. Yeah, we'll take it.
I think it probably happens something like that. Like, again, to get 1 first round pick and then 5 seconds makes a lot of sense, because Durant is, what, 37?
Mm-hmm. Not under contract beyond next year.
And he will sign an extension with Houston. I mean, I think that's what everyone is expecting. Yeah. So there wasn't that threat. The problem that they had is that if a team isn't going to give up multiple firsts, then collecting second round picks is actually a really, really sneaky way to improve your roster greatly.
Yeah.
Because you can use second round picks in a couple of different ways. Number one, you can draft a second round pick. Number two, you can trade second round picks for serviceable rotational players like Jonas Valanciunas and Jake LaRavia, like in a stretch run. So that's another way. The other thing you can do is, if you've got a player and you want to dump his contract because you're way over the luxury tax, maybe even over the second apron, you might be able to find a team that's willing to take on a $10, $12 million player if you throw him a couple of second round picks.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's how Oklahoma has built their dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
It's by taking on other teams' bad contracts and their first and second round picks.
Yep.
And then turning those second round picks, sometimes it's like, hey, will you take this $10 million player? We'll give you 2 seconds. It's like, no, we want a first. They're like, we're not going to give you a first. Well, okay, how about this? We'll give you one of our seconds, but we get a first. And the team's like, all right, fine, we'll do that. Like, and that's how OKC amassed this war chest of picks. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the Paul George for Shea 5 first round picks. Right, that helped. But on top of that, they had all of these other transactions that they had accumulated over the last decade that has led them to some great young players.
Mm-hmm. And they still have like 31 picks over the next six drafts or whatever insane thing it is.
Something stupid.
Just so silly. So I think the way that probably goes is Phoenix said, how about Green, Brooks, the number 10, and another first? And then they determined what the value of a first-round pick was in second-round picks.
Yeah.
And they went five. That's how I think it probably went. All right.
They might have even said, hey, we want two more first, and they said, how about we'll give you 5 seconds?
Sure. There's something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start with Houston here. You mentioned earlier that OKC looks like they're going to be around for a long time, in part because of all their young talent, in part because it's really hard to not just trust that Sam Presti, as they go along here, is going to continue figuring out how to build quality rosters around his stars. Is Houston now in that conversation? Are they further into that conversation than they were prior to the KD trade?
They are, because when we got to the playoffs, Jalen Green really fell apart.
Yep.
And he just showed his age. Yep. And the problem is, on a team like that, when you have so many young players, like, you can't have one of them just kind of check out. And that's what happened. And we can look at the Jalen Green transaction, right? So they signed him to a 3-year, I think, $105 million deal. It's very specifically so they had a $30 million player to trade.
Yep.
Because they weren't enamored with him, and a lot of teams around the league aren't enamored with him. Because of the same exact thing. I mean, he's electric, and he's a super athlete, and he can really, really shoot the three. And we've seen him like walk into Sacramento and just torch the Kings. But at the same time, there's a maturity level that he just, when you have so many of these young players and you're trying to move along, I think this does move Houston to the number two team. They were the number two seed in the Western Conferences last year. They feel more like a true number two seed now.
Yeah, Jalen Green, as a rookie, averaged 17 points a night, then 22, 19.6, and then 21 this year. So you see the talent. Like you said, he jumps out of the gym. He can score it at all three levels. But I think this version of the Houston Rockets, the one that doesn't have Jalen Green and doesn't have Dylan Brooks and does have Kevin Durant, I think they beat Golden State in that 7-game series.
Oh, yeah.
They just, that is the offensive punch they need. And Kevin Durant, for despite the fact he's 37 and coming off, or not coming off, but and had that Achilles injury in 2019, still a really good player. Still a highly, highly effective scorer. If that's the only thing he needs to do for them, he makes them better.
Oh, he's going to draw a crowd.
There aren't that many, and he's going to do the right thing. He's not going to draw a crowd and then say, I'm going to shoot over three players. He's going to draw a crowd and say, there's Amen Thompson on a back cut. Or there's Alperen Şengün alone at the nail. Or whatever it is. Houston got dramatically better here.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think if you're looking at teams that, okay, hey, how do they kind of match up? Could they give OKC a series? If Houston's healthy and Kevin Durant doesn't fall off a cliff, which I don't anticipate him doing, Houston is a team that I think defensively could give OKC a very, very real run.
No, I think so too.
They're not in that first tier. OKC's still alone in a tier in the West, but the Rockets very firmly in tier two now.
Well, they're,
if they weren't already,
probably very firmly the best team in tier two.
Ooh. Interesting. I'm gonna have to look at that. I don't think I disagree.
Okay.
Because there's, I mean, Minnesota, Denver, probably taking Houston over both of them.
Yeah. I mean, talent-wise.
No, I think you're probably right.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk about Phoenix next. Talk about Phoenix, because I think there's a way the Kings might be able to get involved now.
Okay.
Depending on how Phoenix is feeling about their roster and what they kind of want to do. So we'll talk about how the Kings may get involved there, and then we'll talk. ESPN has a bunch of post-finals stuff, including a mock draft of the player that me and Joe absolutely adore. We'll talk about that coming up in the second hour. We're the Insiders. He's James. I'm Kyle. That's Joe. Jiffy Lube sponsors us. Joe, get us out of here.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and Joe Brazil is with us. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader. Okay, so Kevin Durant got traded ahead of Game 7 of the NBA Finals yesterday. Houston, very clearly a contender in the West, at least for me, going into next year.
Yep.
Phoenix now has Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and Grayson Allen. Did they not all roughly, I know they don't do the same stuff.
Grayson Allen can play the three.
Get a little, and Dylan Brooks typically is a forward.
Yeah. That, and on top of that, I think they're probably going to try to use Booker at the one, which I don't think is a great idea, but it's something that they've done in the past. Also, I think they try to use Bradley Beal as a one in some situations. They have a glut of players, so unless they're going to do like a three-guard set the entire game, but they don't have the big man to do that,
right?
Then I don't...
They get him with the number 10 pick.
Yeah, they'll draft Jalen Smith again. They're...
Dragan Bender, anyone?
Dragan Bender. Their roster makeup right now is very, very, very suspect, and it feels like a team that did a move and that will do another move or two down the road.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
The problem is I was trying to figure out, okay, could the Kings get involved with this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you, and I asked, would you tack a couple of picks to Zach LaVine and swap him for Jalen Green? And then you said Green with Grayson Allen works.
Yeah, I think it does the same thing with Dylan Brooks, and that might actually save them some money.
Right, which would be the goal, right? At least you would assume, because their salary cap situation's a mess.
Yeah.
And their roster's a mess.
Yeah.
So could you potentially get a younger version of Zach LaVine and Jalen Green, who maybe his ceiling's a little higher at this point? You tack on a couple of picks to do it. Maybe you get Dylan Brooks. I don't personally want to have to watch the guy, but it is what it is. You know, he's going to play defense, and he's going to do so in a way that I'm sure Doug Christie and Scott Perry would be big fans of. Is that something you'd even be remotely interested in, or is Jalen Green just kind of too redundant?
Okay, so I like Jalen Green as a player. I look at Jalen Green realistically as a young Zach LaVine.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And if you look at Zach LaVine's first season, he shot 42.2% from the field and 34.1% from three. You look at Jalen Green's first season, he shot 42.6% from the field and 34.3% mm-hmm. from three. Year four looks very similar between these two players. But there was a light bulb that went on with Zach LaVine where he realized that he could become a more efficient player, and Jalen Green isn't there yet.
Mm-mm.
And part of the reason why Jalen Green isn't there, in my opinion, is because, again, when you have an entire roster filled with young top-tier picks, whether it's Ausar Thompson or it's Jabari Smith Jr. Amen. Yeah. Or, you know, Cam Whitmore, or, again, you got Jalen Green there, you got mm-hmm. Shepherd there.
You said Jabari Smith?
Yeah, Jabari Smith, Alperen Şengün. You just, like, add all of these players.
Crazy.
It's super, super difficult to bring each of them along. You can bring them along as a group, but sometimes when you're bringing a group along, the finer nuances of the game are lost on specific players.
Sure.
And I think that Jalen Green has the potential to be an outstanding, outstanding player.
You've seen the flashes.
Yeah, and even the flashes, like, think back to the flashes of Jalen Green pulling up from 28 feet and hitting one three after another against the Kings. And then look at Zach LaVine and how many times he did that late in games. It's the same exact thing. There's a talent level, a skill set level that is just off the charts there. but you're kind of lost in the shuffle. Even I'd say Jabari Smith Jr. has totally been lost in the shuffle there. Mm-hmm. He has not been able to take the logical steps that he should have been able to take. Mm-hmm. And it's because they have too much youth. And that's so difficult to do. A guy like Cam Whitmore just getting left out in the cold. Tari Eason, another guy who's in the first 3 or 4 years of his career. Mm-hmm. So I think he's a player that I would gamble on, but it's got to be the right situation. And you've got to be taking a lateral step. And, you know, again, if the Kings could do something like Zach LaVine straight across for him and Dylan Brooks or him and Grayson Allen, I'm in, because you're getting a player who's 7 years younger, and then you're getting an additional player that is a rotational player that helps your team right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, the Kings need shooting. Grayson Allen is a great shooter, outstanding mm-hmm. shooter. They need toughness. You know, again, Dylan Brooks is outstanding toughness dude. Now, does he get annoying? Sure. Do you want him on your team taking bad mid-range jump shots? No, you don't.
Sure.
But that's okay. You need more talent on this team. Mm-hmm. And if you could break up one player into two, and that one of those players that you're bringing in is 23 years old with an unlimited ceiling mm-hmm. still, mm-hmm. that's something that I would consider if I were the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... Again, this is not something that's been reported as even on the table, but when you see a trade like that, and then you see what you observed with the Suns roster, where, you know, we always talk about the Kings roster just needs to make more sense. Mm-hmm. The Suns roster super doesn't make sense, and their cap situation sucks, and they're trying to figure it out. I don't know if Devin Booker doesn't sound like he's going to ask out. Okay, so you have prime Devin Booker right now.
Yeah.
You got to build around him. Mm-hmm. But are they looking to save money, which is what that deal would do? Plus, if you're also attaching a pick or two, I think that's still worth it for the Kings, because you have a good war chest of picks to deal with now.
Yeah.
And two, for Phoenix, they have no assets. Accumulating assets has to be one of their top priorities this mm-hmm. offseason if you're Phoenix. And man, I know that Zach LaVine doesn't necessarily quote unquote fit in that way. But if you're saving money and getting some picks back, you got to at least think about it if you're Phoenix.
Yeah, no, I think that's possible. There are rumors right now, too, that Bradley Beal will either be traded or bought out. And the buyout on Bradley Beal is wild.
What is
wild.
It?
So he's owed 53.7 and then 57.1 on a player option.
So 110.
So $110 million. So because it's a two-year deal, you get to double the years and then add one. So they could break it out over 5 years. Would you take a $21 million a year tax hit? Cap hit on him for 5 years? That's what it would be. Like if you stretch provision him, we $21 million bucks for 5 consecutive seasons.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, actually, it's closer to, because it's 110, so it's 22 million bucks.
Yeah, because from everything I understand, is Brad Beal is not a culture guy.
No.
And I think Phoenix just has to start over as best they can. And if you can get rid of that Bradley Beal albatross,
yeah,
however you can do it, even okay, it's going to cost $22 million a year for the next five, and we're gonna basically have money tied up in a guy who's not playing for our team. I don't care.
Well, that and
I'd way rather that than he's starting, he's not starting, he's available, he's not available. Oh, he doesn't want to be here, but he's gonna stay here out of spite. Nah, peace.
Well, that but in year one you save $31 million bucks off the cap.
Yeah,
and that $31 million bucks would drop them from a second apron team all the way below like even the luxury tax. And so that would save them $100 million bucks mm-hmm. by like spreading his salary out over 5 years. I'd consider it, and I'd also go to Bradley Beal and say, hey, look, this is what we want to do. Will you take 80 cents on the dollar? Can we get you to take a 20% cut off of that? Mm-hmm. So then that way the 5 years, we're looking more like $17 million or $16 million. Will you take some money off of that? And then you can go sign somewhere else and go have a good life and just mm-hmm. not here. I could see them trying to pull that off.
What a disaster.
Yeah.
What a freaking disaster. Plus, if you stretch provision, geez, easy for me to say.
Uh-huh.
If you stretch provision Bradley Beal, It opens a roster spot for Zach LaVine.
There it is.
There you go.
Plus, the other, so people understand this, the stretch provision, you can't trade it. You can't do any. Once you use the stretch provision, it's straight up $22 million would come off your books for five straight years, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep. You're basically working with a $22 million cap hold for somebody who's not on the team.
Yeah, the NBA used to allow an amnesty, a one-time amnesty, when they did their new CBAs.
It was right
CBAs.
After the lockout, right?
Yeah, anytime they do CBA, a new CBA, they would allow you to buy out one contract, and they stopped doing that. They did not have that in the last one, but I remember Michael Finley got bought out. Like, I think they owed him $59 million, and they just like wrote him a check and said, all right, see ya. And it wasn't because he was a bad player. It's just he wasn't.
Yeah, he's player. Expensive.
He was expensive, and he wasn't living up to that contract.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we can bail on that contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the 49ers did this entire offseason.
Yeah, just
like, you're not
on
bad,
everybody.
We're just not living up to the contract. So goodbye. Obviously not on an amnesty. They got to pay against the cap and whatnot. But here's the other aspect of the KD thing now that he's been traded to Houston unofficially. You said on this program that the Miami Heat would look into DeMar DeRozan as a possible option if they miss out on the KD sweepstakes.
Mm-hmm.
They have missed out on the KD sweepstakes. So where...
We're going to have to wait and see.
When does DeMar DeRozan get traded to Miami?
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see if they figure out a deal with the Heat at this point. Everything I heard like a week and a half ago, there were tons of murmurs, tons of like sources saying, hey, like, watch DeMar to Miami and, you know, the framework of a deal that could possibly come to fruition. There's been a little kickback on that over the last couple of days, but at the same time, let's wait and see what happens. Let's wait and see what happens because what I was hearing sounded pretty logical. And we're going to have to wait and see if they actually do finish a deal. And like, look, I don't expect, it's possible DeMar DeRozan's on this roster next season, but I don't think anyone truly expects that.
Is there, have you heard, I don't even want to say, have you heard anything? Are there rumblings? Do we know? Has this come out? It would be logical to me if DeMar DeRozan, very quietly, because he's a pro and Sacramento didn't do anything wrong to him.
Mm-hmm.
If he just very quietly met with Scott Perry and said, hey, can we, I got a couple of years left.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to go somewhere else.
I don't know if that happened, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he didn't make his wishes known during exit interviews. It's not even like exit interviews. It's exit interviews and then like entrance interviews.
Yeah,
it's right. Like.
Well, he said on, was it Lou Williams podcast?
Maybe.
Last year when the De'Aaron Fox drama was going down, he basically said, if Fox gets traded, I got to kind of rethink what I'm doing here in Sacramento.
Well, yeah, of course. And, you know, again, players don't actually get to just decide what they're going to do.
No doubt.
Unless, again, he wants to go and take a whole lot less money to opt out.
But
he's not going to because of his age and because of where he's at in his career. He's not going to give the Kings a discount if they're just to buy him out.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, look, Houston, when they signed Jalen Green to that contract, it literally was a $30 million placeholder so they could trade a young athletic guy that they weren't enamored with as part of their long-term future, mm-hmm. but you need these types of $30 million contracts. It's the same reason why the Kings signed Harrison Barnes, that three-year deal where it was like $17, $18, $19 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's so they had one season, a $17 million player, and then the next, an $18 million player mm-hmm. that they could package for a trade.
Sure.
So I would not be surprised if, you know, again, that's what the Kings are using as their leverage to go on the market. And, you know, the DeMar DeRozan $24.5 million contract that drops to $10 million the next year.
If in capital letters, DeMar DeRozan did say to Scott Perry, Doug Christie, whoever he interviewed with,
mm-hmm.
and said, hey, I don't want to be here anymore. I would like to play somewhere where I have a chance to really compete for a championship over the next couple of years, and I don't think it's here.
Yeah.
You have to do that. I know he doesn't get to decide and get to dictate that, But if you're Scott Perry and you're Doug Christie and you're trying to establish a culture and you're trying to head down a new path, get this team going the right direction, I think having a disgruntled DeMar DeRozan on your roster for an entire season or half of a season is antithetical to that.
Well,
that is moving you the wrong way.
And as harsh as this sounds, like, he didn't fit anyways.
Right.
Like, you should be looking to move him anyways, not because, you know, he's a bad player, but because of exactly what you said. He goes out there and he does what he does. He doesn't care if no one wants him to do what he does. He's going to do what he does.
Made a Hall of Fame career out of doing it.
He has. And so you're kind of stuck with a player that is a square peg in a round hole. But then, you know, as every minute he's on the court, he's about, you know, getting 22 points a game.
If Scott Perry and Doug Christie in their intro presser, or I guess it was technically, is it Doug's intro presser? That it was him with Scott Perry? Yes. That was when Doug officially got hired. That's right. So if they had sat down and said, yeah, the type of team we want, we're going to play all isolation ball. We're going to load up on one-on-one scores, and we're going to be awesome at that. Then, yeah, sure. DeMar DeRozan stays.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a type. He plays the type of game that Doug Christie and Scott Perry are going to want to play.
I would agree.
So to me, it's just logical. It'd be logical for him to want out. It'd be logical for the Kings to want to move him. But nothing on that front just yet, it sounds like. All right. ESPN posted a bunch of stuff post-finals, including some NBA tiers. They're borrowing my idea. Where do the Kings fit in to the NBA hierarchy? We'll talk about that. And then a mock draft with perhaps the best shooter in college basketball heading to the Sacramento Kings. We'll tell you who that is next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's with us. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. Mitch, our guy in New Jersey, is on hold, and Mitch, we'll get to you in a bit. Full disclosure, forgot that we had a caller because I did a bad job today. That's on me. I'm going to wear that. Foul on me. I got fouls to give. It's all good. Okay, so ESPN released a post-NBA Finals mock draft. Hell yeah. You know we love a mock draft here. Yes. The NBA draft is Wednesday, by the way.
I know, it's just wild. This is so crazy that the finals end on a Sunday and we have the draft a couple of days later.
Insane.
Just like, hey, Sam Presti, like,
just a ridiculous calendar.
Dry your tears and go draft somebody.
You're picking 15th, by the way.
And how many picks do they have? Like,
three or four?
Yeah, way ridiculous. Too many picks.
Ridiculous stuff. So the Kings at number 42. So again, we're not at the point of mock drafts or we're not at the point of Kings trading up into the 20s talk where they're getting placed there in mocks, even in mock trades. So we're picking 42nd here. Number 42 overall. Second round pick they acquired from Chicago. And they took, with that selection, Kentucky guard, formerly of Dayton, Kobe Brea. KOBYBREA. 6'5" and 3/4" barefoot. 65 1/4" wingspan. Shot 49.8% from three on 6.1 attempts per game in 2023.
Okay.
Then went to Kentucky and shot 43% last year. and for his career shot 43.4% from beyond the arc. Also had his free throw percentage tick up above 90 last year.
Hmm.
He guards a little.
A little.
He is not super athletic. He is not, he has the requisite size to play the wing. He's not like abnormally big in any way.
He's a two, not a three. That's how I would describe him.
Ooh.
I don't think he can play up.
I think he would have to.
Okay.
Because I don't know that he can guard ones or twos. He does not move very quickly, which is the big which is the big takeaway from watching. There are two takeaways from watching Kobe Brea. One, never gets anywhere with any particular rapid pace.
No.
B, shoots the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Holy smokes, dog. And it's the variety of three-point shots. He's not just like standing in the corner and then when it gets kicked to him. He has some of those. He has some catch and shoot, but he has a nice little step back game. He does. He's very, very effective with a ball fake where he gets so many flybys, little sidestep, wide open look. He shoots off the dribble a little. Why can I not think of the thing the Kings do? Dribble handoffs.
Oh, DHO.
A lot of DHO game. I am a big fan of adding a player like Kobe Brea, who, all right, you don't really know defensively, doesn't handle it a ton. He does a little bit, doesn't turn it over, though, when he does have to handle it, but shoots the bloody lights out. Give me that at 42, and we can figure out what else he can do.
Okay, so talking to NBA-like development guys and assistant coaches, when they go through the draft process, they're hoping that a player has, especially in the second round, at least one true NBA skill.
Yes.
So whether they are an incredible like dribbler,
mm-hmm.
right? Or they're a shot blocker,
mm-hmm.
or they're just a terror on defense, whatever it is. If you can get a guy who shoots, you know, 43.4% from three for his career, and then you watch him and everything he does, it's just so balanced. Like, he's always on balance, and it's just a smooth, smooth shot. So, like, this deep in the draft, if we're, what are the Kings, 42?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Like, you're getting a guy that you at least know that you can hide in the corner and can get shots off.
Yep.
My only concern is that a lot of it is super slow, and that works for Kyle Anderson, but Kyle Anderson's also, like, 6'9".
Right.
With long arms.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy with very short arms
and
not a lot of athleticism. So you might, like, I don't know, I would worry he's more like Brady Hayslip than he is like, you said Bryn Forbes?
Yeah, that was the NBA Draft Net. That was their
comp
for him. Bryn Forbes and Jason Capono.
Yeah, he doesn't even move a lot like I mentioned Seth Curry, right? Because of the knockdown ability.
Yeah.
But it's a little slow. So I don't know if it does work at the NBA level or if he's like a 4A prospect, a guy who's going to have a difficult time, you know, taking the next step.
He played 5 years in college, but he's not 23 until November.
Okay.
The other thing that really jumped out was when he uses his gravity really effectively in terms of creating like back cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And creating driving lanes with pump fakes. Like, it was very rare that you see him just put the ball on the deck and go by somebody. But if he catches and little ball fake, guy jumps, he's very good at putting the ball on the deck. Saw him finish through contact a few times. I think there's enough there that if they take Kobe Brea, it wouldn't be like, wow, what are they doing?
Yeah.
They're taking a guy who shot 43.4%. 49.8% from three for a season on 6.1 attempts a night is insane. You're going to make three threes every game? That's ridiculous.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you, but you got to be able to defend somebody.
That's it. If you can't move, you're toast.
Yeah.
But the bet here is that, okay, we know he can shoot the hell out of it. Can we get him in an NBA training program and get him to just like a requisite level of athleticism where he can give us 15 minutes a night?
Yeah. I mean, that's always going to be the question. And can you take that step with him?
It's interesting. Would you rather see the Kings bet on a guy who like Kobe Brea, who shoots the hell out of it, but man, I don't know if he can really move, or a super athlete who you don't know if he can shoot it?
He's, well, I would probably choose the super athlete just because they don't have those.
Yeah, good point.
But then again, like, the guy's got to be able to step on the court and play.
That's it.
And that's always going to be the question. Like, can he be, you know, can he actually function in NBA rotation?
Man, it didn't look like it. There's some really slow movements happening.
I really enjoyed, like, the three-point shooting. It's just super clean.
It is crazy. Every shot he takes, he is perfectly vertical.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable shooting display if you want to go watch some Kobe Bryant tape.
Yeah.
Not a ton else going on, though. Wonder if Mitch has Kobe Bryant thoughts. Let's get to Mitch in New Jersey on the Elk Grove Kid Talk Line. 916-909-1320. 916-909-1320. Mitch, you're on the Elk Grove Kid Talk Line. What's up?
How you doing, Kyle? James? I think I better stay with the program because you good show. Can always bring up a lot of things.
You're the best.
And you know how I try to get everything done in 10 seconds.
Yes.
I think it was Halliburton's fault. It's guaranteed money. The ink's dried up. You're not going to bet on yourself that you'd be back in the same position. It's not like Dan Marino. I know we had Dan Marino, so he was betting on himself too. But it's more like your fault. I mean, God bless. They kept me. They brought me back in my job at FedEx. You know, two hernias. I broke my leg, and I also got a hip replacement. Thank you. I guess they like me more than not. But anyway, it wasn't roast like I'm here. And I know I'm trying to say. And with the scheduling, I put this up to Joe. Hope I don't forget what I said. They shouldn't play the other conference. Just one division, like they used to do in baseball. Football's different, but it is getting a little hectic with their scheduling too. How about just play more games within your conference? Yeah, I think most of the teams are kind of like west of the Mississippi, maybe I'm cheating a few games, so that will cut down on traveling.
All right, thanks for the call, Mitch. You kind of lost me when you said it's Tyrese Halliburton's fault that he blew his Achilles, and that he shouldn't have played because he has guaranteed money.
Mitch, we love you, but I said, Mitch, I like your second part about the schedule, how maybe we could play within the conference a little more. I said, don't say that first part. I said, don't say that. And he said, okay.
I tried to warn him.
He said, I won't. I said, that's going to make people upset. Don't say that.
That's a bad take.
I told him. I literally told him that.
Not anybody's fault. Goodness gracious.
That's funny.
Shout out to him. But yeah, man, maybe that's it. Maybe it's like very little interconference play, or you play one division from the other conference a year or something like that.
Yeah.
Try and cut down on some of the trouble. I don't know. We're talking about trying to limit NBA injuries earlier and what the NBA could do with their schedule that is not taking games off the 82 game slate, because that doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah.
All right. The other thing I wanted to get to here on the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. He's James. I'm Kyle. That's Joe. Appreciate everybody listening on 1320 AM and 98.5 FM HD2. That's the radio stations. If you're watching on YouTube, hello. If you're watching on Twitch, hello. YouTube.com/ESPN1320. Please subscribe, like our videos. We would appreciate the heck out of that. Twitch.tv/ESPN1320 as well. The James Hammond Kyle Madsen Show. That's our podcast. And you can listen to us live anywhere in the world on the free Odyssey app. Just search ESPN1320. Make sure to favorite that station, so when you open the app, our station is right there for you. The other ESPN thing I thought was interesting was they did a contenders, a tier of contenders.
Okay.
In the NBA. There is a tier right above the Kings called Will the Real Team Please Stand Up? And that's Dallas, Memphis, and Philly. Then there's a tier below that called Stuck in Purgatory. And that's where the Kings have been placed.
Mm.
And, you know, over the years of what been 10 years in this market over the course of my life, finding people saying mean things about the Kings and then roasting them is typically the move. And that was my knee-jerk reaction, was like, okay, yeah, let's see what. But as of right now on June 23rd, I have a really hard time coming up with arguments against putting the Kings in the stuck in purgatory tier of the NBA right now.
Yeah, the only way they change that is to change their roster in the next like 7 days as they get through the draft and the opening of free agency and they make trades and they do something different. As of right now, they are stuck in a very, very awkward and bad place.
Mm-hmm. Where purgatory.
Yeah, you're a 40-win team, less than 500, and you just saw a reduction in wins in two straight seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good place to be. Mm-hmm. And you have players that may or may not want to be here because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got lots of decisions to make. You just hired a new head coach. You just hired a new GM. All of these things. But that doesn't mean that it has to be that way. You know, I think it brings me to, like, one of the questions that was asked earlier of us. And Scooter said, hey, James and Kyle, so much talk about how LaVine talks might heat up. Do you think that Vivek will really let Perry trade him after we went through so much to finally get him on the team? And the answer is, like, yeah.
If he doesn't, fire the GM and you just do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, look, Scott Perry, Scott free reign to do whatever he needs to do right now
mm-hmm.
to make this team better. Like, all options are on the table. Uncomfortable options. All kinds of options are on the table. Things that make people really go, ooh, I don't think that makes me extremely, like, upset that mm-hmm. player X, Y, and Z might be on the way out the door. Get used to it,
because mm-hmm.
that's what, I mean, again, Scott Perry flipped the Knicks roster in a year. I'm not saying he's going to be able to do the same thing with the Kings, but when you look at the Kings roster and they already had, like, eight guys who are, or seven guys, I think, that are not on contracts for this season, mm-hmm. like, this roster is going to flip. Like, I don't think Doug McDermott or Jay Crowder or Markelle Fultz or any of that group of players will be back. Like, there's going to be major changes here. And I think that, especially early on, Vivek has shown that in the first year or two of a GM or a coach, he's all in. He allows that person to go do what they have to do. It's as things wear on and things go wrong that he becomes more and more of a voice in the room. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say he's not a voice in the room all the time, because he is. He is all the time.
Sure.
Like, he's somebody who calls a GM, you know, at a minimum once a day, but probably more than that.
Can you imagine, real quick, this is not disrespect to this person. This is just, let's take away names and faces and just go boss employee.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Aaron Miller called you once a day? Aaron Miller is our boss.
Well, yeah, but I would also say my response to that would be, yeah, but you and I text like 8 times, 10 times a day, even
right,
on a Saturday
but,
and
right,
Sunday.
Right, but we have a show to do.
No,
can you imagine if your boss was just reaching out? Like, hey, was thinking about a segment idea. Like, every day at least?
Yeah.
Ugh.
No,
I'm down to that.
I get that, but same time, it's like, hey, you know, what's happening? How are you building this? How are you developing your squad? All that stuff. And, you know, he wants to know. He wants to know what's next.
There's this clip of Sam Presti going around last night from 2021.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Where he says in there, shortcuts cut long runs short.
Yep.
And guess what, man? There's not a shortcut available here. Or there shouldn't be.
The shortcut happened.
Yeah. That was the Zach LaVine trade, or the De'Aaron Fox trade.
Well, and even for me, the DeMar DeRozan signing was an attempted shortcut.
Yep.
It was a way of getting around the fact that you couldn't develop a player to play the small forward position.
Yep.
And that you couldn't bring somebody else along, that Harrison Barnes was your only option.
Yep.
So you tried to take a shortcut, and it didn't pay off.
And when we talk about long run short, and you had De'Aaron Fox with Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray, and you're a couple pieces away and all this, the DeMar DeRozan thing derailed a lot of that
mm-hmm.
to the point that you had to fire Mike Brown, which led to the trading of De'Aaron Fox. And now you're in purgatory. So my hope is that as they try and climb out of this purgatory, just to borrow ESPN's phrase, that there's not a shortcut in there. Like, let this be what it is. Let Scott Perry do what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if he says, hey, you know what? We're going to kind of have to take a step back here. I think I got these couple of moves lined up where our roster might not be as good. We might win 35 games this year, but it's going to get us in this direction. I got this idea. This is kind of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be an allowance for that. And an understanding that this is, as good as the individuals on the roster are, they're ostensibly at square one.
Yep. What I love about what we saw after OKC won is, you know, they build a stage really fast. It's always crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It's really crazy.
Shout out to the ops team.
Yeah, it's wild. They all climb up on the stage, and there's one guy there that paid for all of it, and it's Clay Bennett. They hand the trophy to him. He holds it up. He hands it right to the team and walks away. No speech, no fanfare, no nothing. He allowed the basketball people to do the basketball thing, and it wasn't always easy. And they almost got there a couple of times, but they kept taking steps back, and then they would build again, and then it didn't work out. I mean, we talked about this. What other team has three different MVPs over a 12-year period? I mean, that's wild.
And what other team has gone to the finals, done their falling short, been bad for a couple of years, and kept the GM?
Yeah.
Let the GM hang out and keep making decisions.
Yeah, so shout out to Clay Bennett. And
like, he sucks. Thumbs down to Clay Bennett for moving the Sonics.
I totally agree.
In a vacuum, as an owner, I think he kind of does it the way you'd want him to.
Well, that, and he doesn't suck in Oklahoma City.
Sure.
He
sure.
is a
yeah, no
superstar,
doubt.
Yep. And there will be a statue of him out front, and rightly there should. And like, I know that's painful for people in Seattle, but man, he took a gamble here.
Yeah, big time.
And he let people do the work. The right people do the work and let them cook. And you just won an NBA championship, and you have got a bunch of them lined up.
I hate that you can't say trust the process anymore in the NBA because it's a punchline.
Yep.
But man, that's what this was for Oklahoma City. And that's what I would like to see the Kings doing more of. To say, trust that success is not going to be linear here. There's going to be some ups, there's going to be some downs, there's going to be some trial, there's going to be some error. But eventually, you've just got to trust your guys to get you to the right point. And have a leash longer than two seasons.
Yeah.
But we'll see. The Thunder providing proof positive of patience paying off. All right. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's with us. The handoff is next. I believe it's Kenny Caraway today. Kenny Caraway going to be in for the handoff. We'll get his thoughts on Game 7 of the NBA Finals, the Tyrese Haliburton injury, the Kevin Durant trade. We'll try and squeeze all of that into the handoff leading up to D'Lo and Casey right here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader. Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Got the handoff coming up shortly. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is with us. No cargo pants today. Pants, but no cargo pants.
Oh. I feel like we forced him to move away from cargo pants.
You know, okay,
I didn't want
to
do that because cargo pants are for the young people.
I'm okay with cargo pants.
It's fair.
Not anti-cargo
pants. To be fair, I was, regardless, you could have said those were the coolest cargo pants you've ever seen in your
whole life. They're
pretty sick. They would not have been on today because it was too hot for cargo pants that day. And I saw a couple people pointing to that in the chat, and I was like, psh, I'm inside anyways. No, dude, no. It's summertime now, and it's time to wear shorts.
Yeah, summertime in Sacramento, not a joke. Even the walk to your car.
Although it was freezing this week. It was cold this weekend.
It was
windy.
That was Wednesday, I think. I'm pretty sure it was Wednesday. And I had a softball game right after that. I did have some shorts in the car, but then and then after we went out again and I threw the pants back on, and it was still way too hot for the cargo pants. So we're out on
those cargo pants. The cargo pants are out until at least fall.
Yeah.
Very good. It'll be hoodie season for most of us, cargo pants season for Joe. Hey, what were we talking about at the break? I wanted to keep talking about it.
I don't know the complexities.
We're talking about deep drafts. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. There's nothing worse. And I was waiting for Kenny to come in here because he's standing at the door, not coming in, even though his segment started 60 seconds ago. There's nothing worse. And I say this because I saw Cody Rhodes. Is that a wrestler guy?
I don't watch the
Joe,
wrestling.
You're not a wrestling guy?
Huge wrestling guy. I'm not aware of Cody Rhodes. And you know what? I was actually looking
Something
into
Rhodes?
This. I was looking into this earlier. It was Cody Rhodes, the video.
Okay, so Cody Rhodes, I think, is a wrestling guy. Is he a wrestling guy?
Help me.
Get
on that.
Oh, yes. According to the Chatty House, yes. And it's him, quote-unquote, shooting a basketball. Never meet your heroes. And never watch your heroes shoot a jump shot. Unless they're a basketball player. That's a life rule I live by.
Huh.
I don't want to see, like, I don't want to see any, I like Stray Kids, right? The
yep.
K-pop group. I don't want to ever see them shoot a basketball, ever.
Oh.
It just changes my perception of somebody. For example, Kenny. I've always liked Kenny. I've always had a great deal of respect for Kenny. And then you watch Kenny shoot a jump shot and you're like, oh, okay. Like, he's for real.
Okay.
Like, Kenny can shoot it. But watching this Cody Rhodes fella just assault a basketball while throwing it in the direction of a rim.
Oh, dude. That
was
is,
it like Carl it, Lewis throwing
it
out the
so
first
It is so hard to
pitch?
Watch. Joe, do you have the video up there?
I can pull it up real quick for
you.
Yeah.
Do you know how to get it onto the stream?
Maybe.
Okay. Click present and then click on that tab when it. Yeah. Oh, no. That's Kenny. All right, Kenny Caraway's here. Kenny, have you seen Kenny Caraway, D'Lo and KC wearing a Hawaiian shirt, letting everybody know that he's a dad? So
summertime vibes.
Okay, no. Now Joe, yeah, you're on the right thing. Now make that full screen, and once that's full screen, we'll get this video. Did you
I
see this video
this
of Cody
movie.
Rhodes,
yeah.
quote unquote, shooting a basketball?
I haven't seen this.
It's one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Okay, here we go. Joe, go ahead and run that video. First of all, he's in a three piece.
Yeah, he's
suit.
In a three piece suit, so that might be a little.
No,
tough.
No, no,
it's
it doesn't.
Fitting.
It doesn't help. Nope.
It's
no,
European
watch.
Fit.
Watch this. Watch this. What is this?
Oh, come on, bro.
Come.
No. Okay. Okay. All right.
No.
All right. Hold on.
Wait, he's making his way to the basket.
Oh, here we go.
Can I stall him out just a little bit? Just a little bit. He's in the three-piece suit, perfectly tailored, European fit.
Duh.
He's buff.
Dog.
Does he make one, though? I haven't even seen this whole video.
There's not a lot of movement I'd be trying to make if I were him.
I don't think he...
He's got a camera crew just following him around. Oh, no.
Gotta be a little prepared. Like, come on, man.
Actually,
wow.
You want to know?
That's
I'm a zag just a little bit.
That's tough.
Actually, not that bad.
His release point is way
Shots
too low.
Are almost
well,
going.
Once again, he can't. I don't think he can jump. He's in hard bottoms. I don't think he can jump. He doesn't want to do too much. It's actually not that bad. All things considered. Now, if he was in like athletic attire and he sure. shot like that. That would be embarrassing.
How do we feel about Domas' first pitch at the A's game?
That was bad.
That was tough.
Oh,
that was a tough look for my guy.
Yeah, that was bad. Did you see Dwayne Wade? He got in at the Fanatics thing. He got in like a pitching cage.
No.
And pitched, and it looked like Domas a little bit.
Oh, man.
It wasn't as slow and like lobby
right, yeah,
as it was,
yeah.
but it wasn't fluid. I don't know basketball players. They got to. It's getting a bad rap right now.
This is what,
getting
what,
a bad
James,
rap.
What
we're
this
talking
is what
about.
Talking about. There's too much sports specialization among the youth now.
The youths of America are not playing multiple sports. So your son plays multiple sports, right? He
yes.
plays baseball and he plays basketball.
Yes.
The crossover between those two, like you could go put him on a different. Like you can have him go play soccer, and be like, oh, I'll be the goalie. That's fine. Like, he can field a grounder. He can catch a ball in the air. Like, there are so many kids that have none of those skills.
Like, basic movement skills.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree with you. I was listening earlier, like I always do.
My man.
And that point, I agree with 100%. Actually, I don't disagree with any points. But I agree with what James was talking about with that, with multiple sports. And when you guys talk about playing in the AAU and stuff like that, I just wonder,
mm-hmm.
what's the difference between playing a bunch of AAU and playing every day like we did? You know what I'm saying? Like, I played every day on concrete,
mm-hmm.
every day. So does that make things safer for me? Or, you know what I mean?
I think
like,
it's,
because we always talk about they just play basketball all the time with AAU. I played basketball every day on the blacktop.
I think there's a, well, it's, I mean, you're running multiple games, right?
on.
And you're probably playing for multiple teams.
With
in AAU.
Yeah.
Plus, you've got specialized training. That, most of these guys, I'm
that's
sure.
That's a bit of a, yeah. That's a bit of an issue.
And so that's where I think it's different. It's the same thing with like baseball players now. I think baseball has the same issue. Did you know there's travel ball for 8-year-olds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Shout out to the Thunder.
Oh, is that you? Is that what you're?
Well, so, I just know the team. Shout out Thunder. Shout out Bespie. Shout out Admirals. Shout out Lab Rats. Yeah.
No. So. So there's travel ball, and that's why I think so many more pitchers are getting hurt now. Mm-hmm. Is because you're playing travel ball. You're pitching 3, 4, 5 games in a weekend, or playing 3, 4, 5 games in a weekend. And then you're going to your pitching coach once or twice. And then you got practices, and then you're doing all this stuff. Then by the time you get to the majors, you've thrown so many pitches. It's such a high stress. Like, your body eventually just kind of breaks down. Mm-hmm. But people will make the same argument where you go, oh, okay, well, kids used to play out in the playground all the time.
That one's a little different, though. Like, I wasn't throwing a curveball at 8.
Right.
And I wasn't pitching as much as I was playing basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, when I go to Reichmuth or 10th and P, when I was 14, mm-hmm. 15 years old, I'd be there from like 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just playing different games.
Sure.
So I play volleyball. Like I said, like
it's nothing to combat the point. I just wonder, like, is it more so that I played football? Because I'm telling you, lunchtime at our Saver Lutheran. Them football games, mm-hmm. I wasn't playing, bro. I wasn't playing, okay? I wasn't playing. I was Travis Hunter before Travis Hunter out there in the two-hand touch. Stop playing with me every day at lunch. Stop playing, all right? But maybe I was playing multiple sports like you guys talked about earlier.
Sure.
And it helped me out to be able to combat just playing at 10th and P for 5 hours a day.
Yeah, not it's a just, day,
but
it's,
you know what I mean.
There's a I don't know the very specifics. I will tweet out the link to this story, but there are doctors who say like guys are coming into the league with older ligaments than they mm-hmm. did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's scientific fact. So don't dispute that. Also, when you talk about the schedule,
mm-hmm. are you anti lengthening the season? Not from a number of games standpoint, but take the finals into mid-July.
So I'm not anti that, but I do think the players are. Remember when we had the COVID years, the two seasons, yeah. You know, the bubble and the mm-hmm. other COVID the year. They didn't like that. They wanted their summers.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted that break. They wanted that summer break. And I remember they were pretty, you know, loud mm-hmm. about vocalizing that. So I don't think they want to go into July.
All right.
And then the other thing with the season, look, I'm not saying everything's perfect or anything. Obviously, in a perfect world, they shrink the mm-hmm. season a little bit. But I'm like, you guys, they're not doing that.
They're not doing that.
But they have given about, what, 3 to 4 weeks extension on the season over the years. If you remember, James, the league used to always, and I just remember this because it was one of those mm-hmm. points that you remember, the league used to always start around Halloween. It always started around Halloween. Now it's mm-hmm. mid-October. You mentioned earlier the All-Star break.
It starts around the 22nd, but training camp and everything else is pushed back a week.
Okay, but the league used to always start around Halloween, like October 30th, 31st, something like that. Now it starts the 20th. That's a week and a half.
The Kings this year started on October 24th. And in 2005?
Yeah, 2005.
2005, they started on November 2nd.
So they've...
Yeah, about a week.
Strike the league, mm-hmm. the start of the season out a little bit. Give them more time. All-Star break, like you guys mentioned, used to be a weekend. Now it's Thursday to Friday mm-hmm. before they play again. And the NBA playoffs the season used to end on a Wednesday
mm-hmm.
and they would play game ones on a Saturday, or vice versa. It would end on a Sunday and they would play on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're not in the play-in, it ends on a Sunday. You play Saturday, maybe Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's 3 weeks that they've done to extend the season. One thing that I do think they need to change is they need to have more days off in between playoff games.
Yeah.
I think that's where they really...
I agree.
Got to figure that out.
I totally agree.
But who knows? TV money, all that other stuff.
That's the thing. That's one of the. That's what I was saying. I'm sure. Like, if I sat down with Adam Silver and was like, "Here's my ideas," he'd be like, "That's why that's bad. That's why we can't do that. We tried that in this way." I'm sure, but it just seems really
LeBron
logical.
LeBron said
to
they
me
need a month off before the playoffs.
I would.
So LeBron
makes
said.
Sense. Like I said, do their draft and free agency then? Yeah. What the hell? All right. What do you guys got coming up on D'Lo and KC?
Obviously, game seven, man. Crazy. Man. Shout out to the Oklahoma City Thunder, but obviously the dark cloud that is Tyrese's injury. So we'll talk about that and KD and all the other good stuff.
Can't wait. Should be a fun one. D'Lo and KC coming up next for James Hamm and Joe Brazil. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is The Insiders. Back tomorrow on ESPN 1320 at 10 a.m. Right here, ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports Center. Drink water. Be nice, people.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.